Good evening, everyone. I wanted to thank you all for listening. We recently surpassed 3,000 podcast downloads, and I'm really excited about it. I'm sure you can hear it in my voice. Be sure to continue sharing and supporting in whatever way your chosen platform allows. Thank you so much, and welcome to another episode of
The Nightmare Society.
I was about 13 when my family went on our annual trip to Poland to visit family. My mother and father both come from a small rural village about 2 to 3 hours away from Warsaw. It's an idyllic little place that's surrounded by lush forest and wheat fields. Life is different there. Everyone is very carefree and relaxed. Being the small place it is, everyone knows one another since everyone essentially lives on the same street. I had made a bit of a reputation for myself there, being known as the quote-unquote American girl who visits in the summers. So whenever we would arrive, the whole village would know. I loved the attention. All the kids wanted to play and the adults doted on me. One of the townspeople I saw most frequently was Tomek. Tomek was a funny guy in his upper 20s who would work in the village deli store. He would always give me extra meat anytime my grandparents would send me out to pick up food or offer to show me inside the kitchen. I never took him up on that offer. The idea of seeing how meat was made was too much for my 13-year-old mind. Though I didn't know it at the time, Tomek had the reputation of being the town lunatic. He wasn't a stranger to the police force, nor the villagers, as he was a bit of a petty thief. My grandparents told me when I got older that my grandfather had not once, but twice, caught him trying the doors of his shed and then excusing himself when caught, as drunk or unsure of where he was. Despite this, I had never had a reason to fear or avoid him. The village had a tradition called Gra Odwagi, which translates to the game of courage. That would fall between the dates of our visits, typically. On this day, the village children would be sent into teams and then given items to find that were hidden around the woods and or village perimeters. The event lasted all day, and the group that had the most found items would win the prize. The courage part of the game would be trying to attain the golden item, which would be in the woods and guarded by a few adults armed with water sprayers and water guns. The only way to get the golden item was to avoid being sprayed with water. If all members of a team were hit, then the team would lose the chance to attain it. My team consisted of my four friends, Eva, Eric, Bartek, and Powell. Our strategy was to get as many of the items around town and then try our luck at the golden object when it got darker, so we would be harder to spot. We got a lot of the items throughout the day and worked up a good sweat after racing against the other children. Around 7 p.m., we had attained 12 items, and we were ready to try our luck at the golden item. We had heard from the other children that the adults were being relentless, guarding the object with ferocity. The area which held the golden item was behind Eric's house, a wooded area. Therefore, he took the lead in devising the plan. Our plan was that we were going to split up into two teams. Eric, Eva, and Bartek were meant to grab the adults' attention and drive them away as far as possible, while Powell and I would sneak in and grab the item. Feeling confident, we headed to the forest as the sun was slipping into the sky. We followed the dirt path for about 5 minutes and then stepped off it, following Eric as he navigated through the shrubbery with ease. He stopped us just as we reached a thick clump of bushes. Putting a finger to his lips, he motioned for us to look through the gaps in the shrubbery and see the adults. It was dark now, so it was hard to see who was actually guarding the items, but we could make out four shapes huddled together, chatting softly. Without hesitation, we moved into our plan of action. Our three friends navigated around and disappeared from our sight, only for us to hear their laughs and the voices of adults yelling to get them. Powell and I watched as the adults raced after our friends, all abandoning the area they had stood around. I remember glancing around and getting ready to jump out of the bushes whenever I felt Powell's arm on my shoulder and saw him make a shushing sound.
"They might not all be gone. Wait a bit,"
he urged. We sat quietly, listening intently for any sounds. Then it happened. The slightest sound of something moving on the other side of the clearing. We couldn't make out who or what it was, so we stayed quiet, peering through the gaps of the shrubbery. Powell saw it first. He pointed out what looked like a dark figure crouching behind a tree closest to the clearing. We watched as the figure moved tree to tree, never stepping out from behind, just simply observing. Just as I was about to suggest that one of us should cause a distraction, we hear a yelp and turn to see another team approaching, clearly happy that there seemed to be no one around where the golden item should be. We watched as this small group of two raced around the clearing but didn't pick anything up. I kept waiting for the adult to step out and spray the kids, but the figure remained crouched, half visible behind the trees. One of the girls approached the area the adult was, but she was busy looking up at the tree, musing to her partner that maybe the object was put on a branch. We watched as she began pulling herself up the lowest branch, and I remember the way my stomach dropped when all of a sudden we saw the adult shoot out behind the tree, grab her leg, and start pulling her into the darkness of the forest. Her partner ran off screaming, leaving me and Powell unsure of what to do. We watched frozen with horror as the adult began covering the girl's mouth in some attempt to silence her. Before either one of us could do anything, all of a sudden Tomek came running up the path and threw himself onto the man. Powell shot out to help Tomek while I ran back for help. When I reached the backyard that was the destination spot for the end of the game, I was screaming uncontrollably in a mix of words that took me a few attempts to get out. A large group of men raced toward the forest while I hid in my mother's arms, waiting to see everyone arrive back safely. My friends Eric, Eva, and Bartek approached me cautiously and asked what had happened and why Powell and I hadn't come back. It had turned out that after Eva, Bartek, and Eric had distracted the adults and drove them away, the adults had decided to end the time to get the golden item. They had assumed that everyone had a chance to try and get it and didn't want the kids wandering in the forest after dark. One of the adults had already pocketed the item when they chased our group towards the main backyard. My team had assumed that we would see that there was nothing there and returned as well, which is why they didn't come looking for us. As I retold what happened, everyone in the backyard listened to me with wide eyes. About 10 minutes passed and we saw the group of men coming back, Powell walking aside his father and the girl who had been attacked in the arms of her assumed father. As they all approached, I asked Powell what had happened. As the parents gathered and talked in hushed voices, Powell described to us how Tomek had beat the guy bloody, but let him escape when he turned away, surprised by the men that had arrived to help. He mentioned that a few men were still out there scouting the forest land for the guy. I then asked the remainder of my friends why help was not sent earlier by the girl's partner that had been running away screaming. Everyone had looked at me with blank faces, and the sudden realization hit me hard. The next events become a blur. It's a mix of me racing to my parents with my friends and asking about the girl. A frenzy of people calling out her name and begging her to come out. A whirlwind of everyone rushing to get their kids inside. And a mayhem of adults swarming together to go search the woods again and call the police. It's been 8 years now, and she hasn't been found. Tomek was one of the main suspects, believed to be part of a two-man kidnapping operation, but backed out when he saw that way too much attention was brought to the event. I'm not sure whatever happened to him, but I can't help but feel guilty that I didn't do anything to help either of those girls. I saw the girl run away. Powell and I were the last to see her. Sometimes when I see a child with braided hair, I get thrown back to that night, and I can still see her braids swirling around her as her figure disappeared from sight. Her name was Dorota, and I hope she's still alive. This happened to me about a month ago. For some context, I'm a woman in my mid-20s who lives alone in a cozy flat in the attic area of an old Victoria building, up in the old servants' quarters where I belong. The design of the roof hanging over my window and the high driveway walls means that I get some interesting acoustics. During the quiet nighttime, the sounds bounce up from the whole long street, even from out of sight. And I can hear the footsteps and conversations of passersby as crystal clear as if they were in the room with me. Yet, standing down on the drive, you can't hear them at all. It was almost 4 a.m. and pitch dark outside. I had been finding it hard to sleep properly the last few nights, so I was still up and pottering around in my PJs with the lights on. I had the window cracked and the blinds half open to get some fresh air in. I usually keep them closed if I have a light on at night. You can see right up into them from the streets and the houses across, which I sadly did not realize for my first couple of months here. Sorry, neighbors, if you saw me dancing and cooking in my underwear. However, I was so flustered from not getting to sleep and desperate for air, I thought everybody else would be snoozing. I had done the same for the previous 3 or 4 sleepless nights. I had just made some tea and settled down to read a book when I heard my door buzzer ringing. I remember thinking it was odd that I had not heard anybody approaching, as I was just sat by my window. But I brushed it off as being sleep deprived. Nobody who visits me ever rings my door buzzer. They call my phone, so I grabbed my phone to check if I had missed something from my friends or family. Nope, nothing. I ran to the window to look down at the porch, but unfortunately I could only see the steps leading up to it. The motion sensor light was on and I could hear a strange scuffling noise, then some thuds. I figured somebody had called the wrong flat by mistake and was probably drunkenly stumbling around. Even with my rational explanation, a strange sense of unease overwhelmed me. I felt on edge after I heard the thuds and turned my lights off so I could gulp through the windows without being seen, but unfortunately couldn't see much. After a few minutes, the noises stopped and the motion sensor light turned off, although I didn't see anybody come back down the steps. I figured I'd either missed them in the dark or the person they were looking for had let them in. After 20 minutes or so, I relaxed and turned my lamp back on to potter around again. After about a minute later, my buzzer rang again. This time it was ringing repeatedly, as if someone was aggressively holding down the button. I froze and stared at it for a while, unsure of what to do, It was starting to get annoying, and I began to worry that it might actually be somebody I know who needs help. Why else would they be ringing my door past 4 a.m. in the morning? I plucked up the courage to answer, albeit with a shaky hand.
Hello?
No reply. I can hear somebody breathing heavily through the phone static. It sounded like a man.
Who is this, and what do you want?
Again, no reply. Just heavy breathing. I hung up, thinking they'd got the wrong flat or the telecom was playing up again. I stayed by the wall phone for a few moments, staring at it, unsure of what to do. The buzzer went off loudly again, and I about jumped out of my skin.
Who is this? Why do you keep calling me?
All I can hear is static again. Thinking I was getting knocked down gingered. Ding-dong ditched for my U.S. friends across the big pond. I went to hang up the phone again. Just before I did, I could hear a muffled voice, and I whipped the phone back to my ear and demanded to know who it was.
What was that?
Let me in.
Huh? Who are you?
Let me in. Please. Please.
His voice starts breaking into a panic.
I'm not letting you in. You haven't said who you are.
There's people coming to get me. They tried to jump me and I ran away. I'm not safe out here. Please. You've got to let me in. Let me in! Help me, please!
Immediately, I noped the hell out and hung up the phone. There was no way I was going to let a strange man into my building who would not identify himself, especially as I had to leave the safety of my locked flat to physically go down to the front porch to open it. My gut told me that his story was complete bull. But on the off chance it was true, I was worried there was about to be a crazy fight in my driveway. I grabbed my mobile phone and dialed 999 as I ran to turn my lights off and shut the blinds again, peeking out through a crack. The man had been ringing my buzzer non-stop since I hung up, but shortly after I turned the lights out, it stopped again. The weird shuffling and thumping noises on the porch started up again as I explained the situation to the emergency operator on the phone. She urged me to stay calm and stay on the phone with her, and said that police were already aware something was happening. Somebody else in my building had called earlier to say that a man had been trying to break into the front door after trying all the ground floor windows down the side and back. They'd had a similar call a few nights before, too. That explains the weird noises I kept hearing, and why I didn't hear him approach from the street at the front. The noises had now stopped, but I was beginning to panic hard. I asked the lady when the police would arrive. She said that they would send out a unit as soon as someone was available. Yay, recent cuts to police funding. And to stay locked inside. After 10 minutes of no activity outside and the motion light turning off, the lady said to stay in my flat with the door locked and to call back if he reappeared, and they would escalate it on their end if he made it into the building. And she ended the call. I sat by the window watching, and sure enough, a few minutes later the noises started again, and the light below came on. I don't think he ever left, or he went down the side to the car park at the back. I still couldn't see what was going on because of the angle from my window. I was about to call the police again when a taxi driver passing by slammed on his brakes and shouted out his window. I stopped to listen.
Hey you, what are you doing over there? Thought I dropped you off on the other side of town an hour ago.
The taxi driver knew this man. What a twist.
Oh, hey, I lost my keys. My friends live here and I'm trying to get a hold of them to let me in.
You told me you were going home to sleep it off and wouldn't be causing any more trouble like earlier. I asked you to get out and you begged me to drop you off home still. So I did, and now you're not home.
I just said I had no keys to get in. I'm trying to stay with friends. They live here.
You could hear that the man was getting agitated and an edge was creeping into his tone as he lied again.
So why are you over here skulking around there like making a ruckus and ringing the bell? What's going on? What are you really doing?
The man gets angry at this time and storms down the driveway to confront the taxi driver. This is my first time getting a proper look at him, although I could only see the back of him. He looked like a normal, well-presented young guy with brown hair, black t-shirt, jeans, and trainers. I was surprised. Based on his appearance, he would not be somebody I would normally think to avoid late at night. I couldn't really make out what was said next as they were both shouting over each other, but I could hear the taxi driver yell, and the man suddenly leapt towards his car door. The taxi driver quickly screeched off down the road, leaving the man standing there, swearing and seething. It was at this point that I realized I had been an idiot, frozen by the window watching this scene unfurl beneath me without calling the police to let them know he was back. I ducked down to pick up my phone, which I must have dropped amidst the commotion. As I spoke to a different operator, the man turned around and strolled down the driveway a little bit, but seemed to hesitate and stopped, staring up at my building. I tried to get a good look at his face, but it was too dark to make out much detail. He stood like this for almost 10 minutes, just standing there and staring up at my window, occasionally swaying from side to side. I knew rationally that he couldn't see me peeking out, but I could swear he was staring right at me and knew I was there. He stopped looking at my window and turned to stare at the door for a few moments. I was begging the emergency operator to get the police out here sooner as I was worried he was going to try the door again. However, I think the confrontation with the taxi driver made him lose his nerve, and he was worried about police showing up. I could hear him make an odd huffing, snorting noise of frustration as he turned and left my driveway, slowly walking down the street and out of sight. I updated the emergency operator with the direction he headed off in and ended the call. About 10 minutes later, I saw a police car cruise by with its headlights off, heading the way he had gone. Unsurprisingly, they never found him, as it had been too long and there were too many side streets and alleys for him to slip away down. He did not come back again, but I stayed vigilant by that window until sunrise, crying my little eyes out and chain-smoking like hell. I didn't sleep properly for weeks afterwards, and I get extremely paranoid walking to and from my building now. I've stopped taking the bins down if the sun is even slightly setting. Luckily, I had already begun the process to move elsewhere for unrelated reasons, so I only have to live here for a couple of more weeks before I move into a big house with friends. I liked living on my own before this. Now I'm very grateful to be losing my privacy to have some backup. Shout out to the brave taxi driver who stopped to confront him. You were more helpful than the local police, and I don't know if he would have left if you had not scared him off. I wish I could ask you what the heck happened when you met the man earlier that night. So, strange man trying to trick me into thinking you were in danger so I would let you in? Let's never, ever, ever meet. A huge thank you to our contributors for the night, Thief in the Shadows and Emma the Junicorn. Thank you both for sharing, and thanks to you, the listener, for returning. Don't forget to follow me on the social media listed, and as always, stay safe.